What Happened in 2014 edition of Radio Free Thinkers. This week, we take a look at the top stories, events, and what have you of 2014. Let's begin episode 280.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross sword, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of spark stuff. We are aware of the cosmos and know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other sun. We have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello and welcome. Tis I, Dawn, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. So this is the first year in reviews for Radio Free Thinker, and, well, I was unsure how I should do it. Should it be a top 10 list? Should I break it up into categories? Should I do it chronologically? Well, I skipped all that and went for sort of a random style, which really is kind of a combination of all the above. So let's start with science, something that's not always front and center on Radio Free Thinker of late, but this was a great year for science, and space science in particular. Curiosity was perhaps the most productive player this year. Not only has the rover marked its second year on the planet, as we measure it here by us Earthlings, but it's also achieved the milestone of marking its first Martian year of exploration. Now, those who may not remember, Curiosity was a car-sized rover that landed on Mars in the Gale Crater in 2012 in a supersonic parachute with rocket-powered thrusters they called the Mars Landing Engines. It was known at the time as the 7 Minutes of Terror, those being the minutes we were out of contact with Curiosity as it actually landed. Of course, the landing was successful, and having marked its anniversary, it has also achieved some landmark discoveries on our distant cousin. The way the lander itself worked was very important because scientists were rapidly approaching a size limit on landers. You see, the popular method of landing a probe was to sort of wrap it in giant bubble wrap and have this bouncy ball land, well, bounce its way to a landing. It worked great. But you see, Curiosity was too big to use this. They could have used the same system they did on the Viking mission, essentially rocket-powered deceleration and pop, land on some legs, but this required extra weight to deal with either a hard landing or prolonged rocket burn. So thanks to Curiosity, we now have a proven technology to land virtually any size lander. It used a heat seal to start slowing down, then it deployed a parachute, then it fired rockets to allow it to sort of hover and then winch down Curiosity. Complicated, but now a proven technique. And for reference, going back to the 2 years on Mars from Earth, but only 1 year from Mars, well, that's because the Martian year is actually 687 days. So it's actually year 1070 CE on Mars. Sans the whole leap year thing, of course. But I would only be, well, we don't really need to go there. Although there are many pieces of evidence that pointed to ancient oceans on Mars, it was this year that Curiosity finally put the nail in the coffin of oceans for Mars. Not only for the discovery of minerals that can only form in the presence of water, but of formations like mudstone that you need, well, mud to make them. It also discovered layer rocks that could only have formed in water and at such a thickness that it would have required millions of years for them to form, millions of years that they had to be submerged. Ergo, we now know for sure that Mars had oceans on its surface for millions of years. Curiosity also experienced a Martian fart. Well, not really. It did detect methane gas. Well, a whiff of methane. Now, this is a major event because one of the proposed ways of discovering life on another planet is to find methane gas. Why? Well, as it turns out, on planets like Earth, over 90% of the methane is produced by life. And biological methane has a distinctive isotope signature. Also, methane has a very short half-life in the atmosphere where it's readily broken down by solar radiation. So if there is significant and persistent amount of methane on Mars, this may point to a biological source. Of course, the rover only came across a very faint but tantalizing amount of the gas. So early days, and well, we all love a mystery, especially when alien life might be involved. Curiosity also achieved the first picture of the Earth and Moon from the surface of another planet. Another humbling perspective on how small this planet truly is and how precious we should be treating it. Also a first on another planet, Curiosity witnessed the transit of the planet Mercury across the Sun. Of course, there was the release of the awe-inspiring photos from the Mars Observer of Curiosity on Mars and the tracks that it has left so far in its journey. Another Martian landmark was Opportunity, celebrated its 10th year on the planet in January. It has also set a new official world distance record for traveling over 40 kilometers on a distant body, beating the old record held by the Soviet lunar probe Lunokhod 2. And although experiencing some power issues early this year and some memory problems towards the end of the year, these hurdles seem to have been tackled, and Opportunity looks great to go as it enters its second decade of Martian exploration. Cassini also celebrated its 10th year anniversary exploring Saturn and its moons. We also added another place where life could exist in our solar system. It was discovered that the moon of Saturn, Enceladus, seems to be harboring hidden oceans under miles of ice. This was first suspected when it was observed by the Cassini probe that Enceladus had water geysers. It was in 2014 that geological measurements confirmed the presence of subterranean oceans. Cassini also saw for the first time waves outside of the Earth. They were seen on two lakes of Titan, as well as discovering something else, and we're really no idea what it is. But it was dubbed the Mystery Island because, well, it looks like the island appears and then disappears on Titan seas. Not to be outdone, the Voyager 1 probe, now in its 38th year of service, is now officially our first interstellar spacecraft. It was calculated that the Voyager probe left the Sun's heliosphere. Okay, to be fair, it actually departed was probably sometime in 2012 or 2013, but it was only the last year that NASA and the scientific community as a whole agreed that it was now truly out there. Another high point for the year was the Rosetta mission. Not only was it a space mission lasting over a decade, but it successfully rendezvoused with a comet and deposited the Philae probe on its surface. Yes, Rosetta was launched in 2003 and has traveled several orbits around the Sun and a number of flybys of Mars and Earth to gain momentum and correct its path so it would be into position to meet up with Comet 67P. Comet 67P, the rubber duck comet as it's been nicknamed, is only 4 miles long and about 2 miles wide. Rosetta traveled over 6.4 billion kilometers. That's an achievement far better than hitting a dime on the moon with an arrow, if you get what I mean. So far, we've discovered the comet has an oscillating magnetic field. The water composition has also been measured and led to an interesting discovery. You see, here on Earth, we have a lot of the stuff called water. Helps make life happen. Well, it's been assumed that most of the, quote, natural water on Earth, the water that was present when the Earth coalesced, well, it was burnt away by the heat of the young hot Earth, the impact that created the moon, or just the massive bombardment of asteroids during the early days of solar formation. So this led to a question. We have lots of water now, and it seems unlikely that it's our own water. So where did it come from? Well, one candidate was comets from the Kuiper Belt, the realm of Pluto. Well, 67P is a Kuiper Belt comet, and based on Rosetta's measurements, we can now rule out this region as a source of our local aqua. We were also surprised to find a lack of ice on the surface of the comet. This is seen as very weird because we've always thought of comets as sort of giant dirty snowballs. We are learning more and more every day as Rosetta escorts 67P around the Sun. Another highlight of human exploration of the solar system and related to Rosetta was the landing, for the first time ever, of a probe onto the surface of a comet. The Philae probe landed on the comet, giving us the first analysis of the surface of a comet, up close and personal examination of its composition. Sadly, Philae bounced on landing. And a bounce on a low-gravity comet means a jump of several kilometers. And when Philae finally landed, it was largely in the shadow of a rock formation. This meant that the life of Philae was cut short. But there are hopes that, as the comet rounds the Sun, the solar panels that are now currently obscured by shadow will be unblocked, and it will receive sufficient light to revive Philae and allow it to continue its mission on the comet. Another exciting, well maybe I should say preview to exciting, was the launch in early December of the Orion capsule. This was the first time in 43 years that a capsule capable of taking humans once again to the moon or perhaps nearby asteroids or even eventually the holy grail of space, Mars, was successfully launched. Sadly, currently, you know, there's only 8 left of the 12 astronauts who walked on the moon, walked on a non-Earth body, and their average age is 82. With no firm plans to return to the moon or finally venturing to Mars, and only currently rediscovering the ability to send people to distant celestial bodies at all, well, it is likely the last days of the Roman Empire, where there seems to be more glory in the achievements of the past than in the future, as these aged astronauts eventually die out and we return to a particular state of the world where we can no longer say that this person walked on the moon and talk about a living person. On a more positive note, the number of nations sending space bodies has increased. We have the success of India's first Martian probe, MAVEN. Now that it has arrived at Mars, it will now study the Martian atmosphere with an aim of discovering exactly what happened to the atmosphere that resulted in Mars losing most of it. Okay, I seem to have a bias for space news, but there were some other scientific highlights outside of space. This was the year that we discovered the very first animal to enjoy intercourse. That is the first creature that we know of where the daddy fish, they were fish, well, he put his you-know-what into her what's-it, and little baby fishes were expected to appear shortly afterwards. It's funny, if you take a look at Microbacchus dickus species, yes, that's its name, well, if you look at the photo of a dicky, you would see two appendages on the lower half of the body. They actually look more like proto-legs or something. No one suspected what they could be used for, and they had a long time to think about it. Dicky was discovered in Scotland in 1888, and it was only 2014 that Professor John Long finally figured out what their purpose was. They were essentially penises, and they had two of them. How weird is that? Okay, another first was the creation of a purely synthetic chromosome made from scratch. They then inserted this chromosome into some yeast, and lo and behold, it worked. It eventually replaced the natural chromosome, and one could say, become a truly new and partially man-made species. Now, to be fair, they were just copying the original chromosome already found in the yeast, but up until now, any genetic manipulation was done organically by using natural DNA and sort of tweaking it a little. This was the first time the DNA was created out of raw products from the bottom up with, quote, man-made materials. Now, I've talked a number of times about how I feel that, in general, GMOs are safe. The genetic manipulation is only occurring within the natural occurring DNA. Well, this changes all of that. And it's still early days, but we as a species can play the proverbial god to make life out of nothing, to create DNA that has never been seen before, and as such, the normal comments that it's natural and therefore likely safe no longer applies. The purpose of this research is to allow us to make precise experiments and understand the vast amount of, quote, junk DNA all life seems to have. The next goal of the research team responsible for this accomplishment is to fabricate a complete genome of the yeast and use it to replace the natural DNA. Another interesting thing that was discovered this year was the blood of the young, your proverbial vampire. He actually might have had something going on there. They did some experiments where they actually transfused the blood from young mice and infused it into old mice. And the old mice seemed revitalized, and they began acting and behaving as if they were many, many years younger than they were. The scientists who did the experiments noticed that it had a rejuvenating effect on their brains and muscles and reversed some of the signs of aging. So maybe the real secret to the fountain of youth is little Johnny. Can someone grab me a needle and some blood donation bags? And now for something completely different. When do you suppose the first writing appeared? Would it surprise you that it was 3200 BCE, or a little over 5,000 years ago? And if we just think of numbers, that goes back another 1,000 years. The oldest sculptures date back to about 25,000 years, and cave paintings have been found that date about 40,000 years. Well, last year we discovered that art, or at least our ability to use symbolic symbols, goes back a lot longer than that. Researchers have discovered a shell engraved with a geometric pattern of a hash sign that was likely created by Homo erectus in a site known as Triniel in Java that date back between 540 to 430,000 years ago. Analysis of the engraving made on freshwater mussels suggests that the markings were made using a shark tooth or something hard like that, and that they created this sort of zigzag designation or design. One researcher said the engraving was probably made on a fresh shell specimen that retained its brown sort of skin color, which would have produced a striking pattern because the lines would have been a brilliant white on this dark canvas. Why is this important? One of the attributes that we use to distinguish consciousness, intelligence, human intelligence, is our ability to work with symbolic objects. All other types of intelligence are, so far as we know, limited to sort of literal objects. This discovery shows that the emergence of this symbolism emerged a lot sooner than we previously believed, and in an odd way, shows that not only humans have symbolic logic, because this shell was not carved by a human, at least not in the way that we would think of it, but by Homo erectus, technically just a primate that happened to be along our evolutionary tree. The fine hints that many other such items, 300,000 years worth in fact, are out there awaiting discovery, and it raises the question of just how much further back in the human lineage such behavior might have originated. Okay, I think we've gone over all the sciencey stuff and really mostly positive news for 2014. We're going to break for a moment, and when we come back, some of the more darker sides of 2014.
Subscribe to the Radio Free Thinker podcast and take it on the go and download previous episodes. Subscribe via iTunes or at radiofreethinker.com. Remember to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts to share with us, email at info@radiofreethinker.com.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen, and then get riding.
And we're back. Another event of which 2014 will be seen as a landmark year is return of the Cold War, as well as the reintroduction of war to Europe. Of course, I'm making reference to Russia's stealth attack on and annexation of Crimea, and probably large parts of eastern Ukraine, at least eventually. The whole incident was almost farcical, with Putin in the beginning denying Russia had anything to do with the quote, natural uprising in the Crimea. The fact that most of the quote, rebels were wearing Russian uniforms, sans the emblems, well, that was just coincidence. Of course, the fact that a few weeks later, after the aforementioned rebels were first joined or supported by labeled Russian forces, remember, Russia does have a naval base at Sevastopol on the Crimea, well, they then proceeded to force all Ukrainian military off the peninsula and then officially annex the region, all under the assertion that Putin had nothing to do with it. Nor did they have anything to do with the armed uprising, this time largely indigenous, in the eastern third of the Ukraine. And the fact that these fighters seemed to be able to get their hands on top-quality Russian weaponry, and there were numerous incidences of Russian troops accidentally getting lost and then found in the Ukraine, or those Russian soldiers who were sort of off-duty or on vacation and happened to be in the eastern Ukraine. Okay, seriously, the Russian war in the Ukraine marks a low mark in recent history. One would have to go back to the 60s to find anything sort of as bad. Think of the Prague Spring, where again you had Russian forces intervene in an Eastern European country for their own particular benefit. And there's more to it than just that. So let's just give a quick little recap. When the Soviet Union dissolved, Ukraine agreed to give up all the nuclear weaponry on its soil, with a treaty signed by Russia, the U.S., and Ukraine that Ukraine's territorial integrity would be guaranteed. More specifically, a memorandum stated three pertinent points: that they would respect Ukraine's independence and sovereignty within its existing borders, refrain from threatening or using force against Ukraine, refrain from using economic pressure on Ukraine in order to influence its politics. And in this last one, Russia's been using quite a lot on a number of its sort of oil-dependent neighbors, including the EU, for years. This understanding was signed in 1994. 20 years later, Putin has torn this document to shreds. Not only has it ramifications of remilitarization of Europe, it was announced late last year, actually, that Germany is now designing new combat tanks aimed at the possibility of armed conflict with Russia. No, a greater harm done was the idea of collective security and demilitarization. You see, in 1994, the Ukraine was the third largest nuclear power, and it gave it up. It put its faith in the hands of the world, and well, it lost. Russia knew its actions would be met with global condemnation, so the timing, just after the Winter Olympics, makes the move seem even more premeditated and cynical. One of the big questions for 2015 will be whether Russia will maintain its aggressive stance. With the collapse of oil and the subsequent devaluation of the ruble, which will likely result in the collapse of the Russian economy, will Putin survive the year? What lengths will he go to maintain power? There are a number of other territorial disputes that he could manipulate to subvert the dissent, you know, that would kind of come up from the poor economic conditions, and sort of use it to renew a nationalism. It worked for Thatcher in the 80s. Another global non-first was the rise of radical fundamentalism in the Middle East that caused everyone to have a complete and total hissy fit and near mental collapse. Of course, 2014 will be marked as the year of the rise of ISIS. We covered ISIS previously on Radio Freethinker, but here's a quick recap. Iraq as a nation was destroyed by the U.S. after their invasion in 2003. Harsh, I know, but true, and all the sides of the debate largely agree on this point. In the wake, a number of suppressed tensions became the defining feature of the failed state. These tensions were largely sectarian in nature. So you had Iraq divide into three proto-states: Kurdistan, controlled by the Kurds, and to date the most stable part of Iraq. You also had what some called Sunnistan and Shiistan, controlled by Sunnis and Shiites respectively. The fact that Baghdad, the seat of government, was largely Shiite, as well as the majority of the voting population, well, the Shiite government, instead of trying to bring the country together and forge a new post-Saddam nature, instead took the opportunity to stack the institutions, like the police and the military, with Shiite sectarians, and use the power of the state to exact revenge on the Sunnis for the sins of Saddam. This first round of bloodshed ended with the American surge. Give credit where credit is due, the dramatic and overwhelming use of force can bring peace, at least in the short term. As the U.S. withdrawal forces, the underlying tensions, which were never really addressed, reemerged. Of course, now you have an even more radical and militant leadership on the side of the oppressed Sunnis. You see, one of the ironic effects of this retribution mentality is that anyone who will compromise was either backstabbed by the Baghdad government or killed as traitors by the oppressed Sunnis. Only the most radical and violent survived. Ergo, we now have ISIS as the leaders of the Sunnis in their particular region. And I say region and not Iraq because one thing that has escalated is the Iraq war is no longer just the Iraq war, but now includes the conflict in Syria and truly does represent a unification, albeit in sort of a mafia-style governance, of the Sunni people in the regions, with fear of it spreading to Jordan, Lebanon, and other regions in the area. Now, of course, as a Westerner, do you really care about what brown people do in a land whose city's names sound like mumbo-jumbo? Well, the standard answer is no. But this is different. The reason why ISIS makes the list, where a Boko Haram, another militant, violent, murderous nut group, which fails to make the list, well, the short list, they were one of the most horrific low points of the year. No, ISIS makes the top 10 because they did something only one other terror group has managed to do before: get the U.S. to shoot itself in the foot. How did it do this? Well, it executed, no, let's put it out there, they beheaded several people in a vain or perhaps purposeful attempt, I am still unsure about this, to scare the U.S. into doing something that would bolster ISIS' position in the Middle East while causing the West to both look like warmongers and costing them millions in dollars. True to form, albeit perhaps on Obama's part somewhat reluctantly, the Warhawks won out, and once again the world bears witness to Western powers bombing and killing people who are currently living in Stone Age conditions because apparently we fear that they will cross the Texas border with Ebola and destroy the Americas or something. Note, I said Americas, plural. Well, it seems we discovered this year our own despot leader, Harper, is also a Warhawk. Not only rhetorically, as we saw in the War of 1812 military propaganda. No, this time we're sending support to the Ukraine and fighters to Iraq. So we are seeing ISIS may not be the head of a global terrorism, nor are they plotting the end of Western civilization, but there were some trends that they were helping perpetuate. 2014 also saw the rise of vacation terrorism. That is, people like you and me, those who are first, second, or 10th generation Canadian, often white folk as well as those others, people who watch one too many YouTube videos, maybe had a fateful conversation with a radical religious person, and the next thing you know, Johnny Smith is on social media burning his passport in Syria, proclaiming that he will die a martyr for Islam. The quote, radicalization of homegrown terrorists, largely terrorists abroad, became a major concern for the likes of the RCMP. And by terrorists abroad, I mean there are local homegrown people who will go off to Syria to fight and commit quote-unquote acts of terrorism there, not so much acts of terrorism here, although that is up for debate. And although less concern was given to those who were doing the same thing but for the other side, again, what counts as a terrorist and a freedom fighter depends more on who you support and not on what they do. I did mention homegrown terrorists abroad, but sadly last year also marks the first major terrorist attack in many a decade right here at home, with the most dramatic and soon-to-be TV movie, the attack on Parliament Hill. Now these attacks, at least to me, they're not terrorist attacks, but lone wolf nutjobs. They're not following some global jihadist, they were not part of some great Al-Qaeda plot or ISIS plot. These were people who just sort of had enough and said, hey, I'm going to do something, even if what they chose to do was barbaric and horrible and never should be supported. That said, if we were not in Iraq, if we had a more moderate leader, well, I am dubious these events would have happened. Another trend that is too early to tell if it will be a thing or just a blip in the coming home of terrorism inspired by the events of the Middle East, and by inspired, I guess, I mean that in two ways. First, the ISIS videos on the internet are like Hollywood quality videos, not just some cell phone footage or the awkward Bin Laden videos that used to be put out. Well, they're reaching people. Of course, the second way events are inspiring people is the West's response to the, quote, threat, where we see yet again the disproportionate and or indiscriminate use of military actions, where the deaths of women and children are seen as acceptable collateral damage. Well, that also reaches people and inspires them and pushes them into this radicalization. And of course, the elephant in the Middle East room is also a major event of 2014, the Gaza War. As yet another example of what Israel's callously called, quote, mowing the lawn, 2014 saw perhaps the most violent and unrestrained attack on a civilian population in decades. Operation Protective Edge saw the Israeli Defense Force, under the pretext of finding some kidnappers, which turned out to be somewhat misleading, but it did provide an opportunity to put a wedge between the then just announced reunification of Gaza and the West Bank. Well, long story short, 6 dead Israelis and over 2,000 dead Palestinians. I would like to say this is a blip, a unique event, but alas, this has become standard operating practice for the Israeli Defense Force, or IDF. And extra dollops of disgust were added this time when the IDF actively and purposely targeted a UN building, a school in Patak, designated a safe place. It also destroyed an already precarious infrastructure, which to this day can only supply Gazans with about 3 hours of electricity a day. It resulted in more than 100,000 homes being destroyed, with the IDF itself saying that only some of them were targeted for military purposes. But that's not the worst. No, to me, the worst thing that happened was when Nobel Prize winning, Nobel must be spinning his grave about this one, Barack Hussein Obama authorized the resupply of missiles and other such material during the attack because Israeli supplies were running low. while simultaneously calling for the cessation of hostilities. How insane must he be? Talk about compartmentalization. I am saddened by the prediction that the events in Iraq and Syria will result in the resurrection of terrorist-style attacks in the West Bank. Not only focused on illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank, but targeting the Palestinian Authority itself, which is now seen as largely collaborators with the Israeli occupation. And on the one side note, for those who wave the flag of right to self-defense, whenever Israeli attacks the Palestinians in either the West Bank or Gaza, one needs to remember that the West Bank is occupied territory. The Gaza is essentially the same thing due to the blockade, and so they're both similarly under Israeli control. On top of that, you have Israeli settlements in the West Bank in clear and unambiguous violation of international laws and amounting to a war crime. So ethically and legally speaking, when people defend Israelis' actions like the Gaza War, they are saying that the people of Poland were in the wrong when they resisted the Nazi occupation of their nation. On that positive note, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, the DNA strand of the year. Standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck. I'm just a speck compared with a star.
Radio Free Thinker is broadcast Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can also hear us Mondays at 8 a.m. on UMFM 101.5 FM in Winnipeg, Fridays at 3 p.m. on CFBX 92.5 FM in Kamloops, and Saturdays at 9 a.m. on CKXU 88.3 FM in Lethbridge. Our thanks to all the stations that broadcast Radio Free Thinker and help promote skepticism and critical thinking. If you would like to have Radio Free Thinker syndicated on your local station, please email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag, all types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle, there's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
And we're back. We also have the virus of the year, Ebola. Now this was a story that had its beginning in December of 2013, but the world didn't know it. It was not until March or April of 2014 that the UN was reporting an outbreak of Ebola in Guinea. By July, Doctors Without Frontiers was announcing an epidemic was happening and was out of control. We started covering the story in early August right here on Radio Free Thinker. By September, over half a dozen countries were trying to contain the disease. The largest outbreak prior to 2014 event was a little over 200 people. This number was reached in May of 2014, and by the end of the year, it is suspected that at least 8,000 people have died and over 20,000 people have been infected. Not only has the outbreak resulted in deaths several times an order of magnitude over previous epidemics, it has killed more than six times as many people than all other infectious outbreaks of Ebola combined. And let's remember, it's not over yet. The infections still continue to spread. But most people no longer expect the worst case scenario of over a million infected, so I guess there's some good news there. That said, another good bad thing may be happening. As the number of people infected grow, the possibility of Ebola mutating increases. It is feared that Ebola may become endemic. That is, it will no longer be a rare outbreak, but something people get all the time, like malaria or something like that. That's bad. However, to achieve this sort of endemic state, Ebola will also have to mutate to become less lethal. so people will actually be less likely to die from it. And another bad, it may no longer need a wild host like bats that it seems to need now to live in naturally. That is, we humans may become the new regular home for Ebola, and thus another natural killer will be introduced into our normal everyday lives. And that leads us to another major announcement of 2014. Sadly, something we knew was coming for a couple of years. This year, the WHO, no, not the musical group, but the World Health Organization, well, the WHO announced that multiple resistant bacteria has become a global threat to public health. What are MRBs? These are bacteria that have become resistant to the currently available antibiotics. This was not some miraculous achievement of the bacteria, but happened because of our own stupidity. You see, when people are prescribed antibiotics for colds or other viral maladies, well, they have no effects on the viruses, but they do help bacteria learn to resist these drugs. They can do this because we often stop taking antibiotics when we start feeling better. This usually is just long enough to kill off some of the bacteria, but leaving behind those that are most resistant to drugs. As this cycle is repeated, the more resistant bacteria continue to grow until eventually they become completely immune to the antibiotics. When these are benign bugs, not a huge problem outside of those with compromised immune systems, but when bacteria like Streptococcus, Salmonella, E. coli, and others, well, we have turned the clocks back to the 19th century when most people died from bacterial infections. Although we were quickly trying to rebuild our arsenal of antibiotics, the last one to roll off the assembly line, so to speak, was in the 80s. We are desperately trying to play catch-up. This, though, is not the worst news. We also saw the anti-vax movement reap what they have sown, as 2014 was a record year for outbreaks of whooping cough, measles, and other diseases that were on the verge of eradication, at least in the West. And speaking of eradicating a disease, we were also so close to eradicating polio from the globe. And then, alas, thanks to religious demagogues who claimed the polio vaccine was a Western plot to kill all Muslims and induce sterility, an idea that gained legitimacy when it was discovered that the polio vaccine campaign in Pakistan was used by the United States to help track down bin Laden. Well, we took a huge step backwards in our fight against this particular disease. You know, I have to apologize. We started off on such high notes, and yet, well, let's keep going. So, it has been announced, likely to be confirmed, that 2014 was the hottest year on record. California is experiencing an unprecedented drought, something the area has not experienced in over 1,200 years. Many other parts of the U.S. are experiencing similar droughts. Scientists now say that the collapse of the Western Antarctic ice sheet is inevitable, and that ice sheets in Greenland are melting far faster than previously predicted. Add to this, the UN announced nearly one-fifth of the 720 UNESCO World Heritage Sites will be affected by rising sea level this century. And just to put the nail into the coffin, perhaps not the most subtle imagery I've ever used, but sadly appropriate, anyway, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, have released their fifth report on the state of the planet. As well as you might have guessed, things do not look good. The last report was published in 2007, and that was largely a diplomatic wishy-washy document that stated firmly that the globe was warming and we humans played a role in it, but kind of fudged it a bit. I say wishy-washy because these reports are first created by scientists who never like to say for sure on anything. It's all probabilities. The likelihood of such events increasing may happen, but never this was caused by climate change. Then you add to that the sort of error bars. So, you know, the globe will likely warm between 1 to 5 degrees, depending. And then these drafts are sent to the politicians who make them fuzzier and amenable to their goals of not actually rocking the boat. So the last line kind of becomes that there's a chance that global temperatures might elevate about a degree or so, maybe, maybe not. And, you know, we should probably take some kind of action before the end of the century. Wishy-washy. Well, the last report did not mince words. It stated in strong language that the human activity is the primary source causing climate change, and this will result in significant increase in global temperatures that will result in rising oceans that will destroy vast areas of coastal regions, wiping out some island nations, increasing the rate of global extinction of plants and animals. It was so frank that it even scared the Chinese and at least paying lip service to greenhouse gas reduction. That said, even in this heightened awareness that's been created by the latest IPCC report, our own government is still basically climate change denialists. Australia recently elected their own Harper. He's pulled back on greenhouse gas policies. And even the most ardent nations are only doing token efforts that will not likely change things significantly, at least till the end of the next century. So it looks like things are going to get a lot worse before they even start to get better. I think another issue that will gain importance is inequality. We saw last year a number of high-profile homicides, or perhaps I should call them more appropriately, copocides, where you had black men, sometimes children, killed by police officers under circumstances that at best seem suspicious, while others, such as the Eric Garner, the I can't breathe guy, well, wrongdoing on the part of cops was obvious, and yet no criminal charges were laid. No disciplinary action was taken. It was just a given that these were expendable second-class citizens. These acts in themselves may not seem that unusual. The U.S., to be fair, has always been a little racist, more than less. But there was a turning point in the Ferguson protests when the officials brought out military-style riot police, including an armored personnel carrier and at least one sniper eyeing the crowd. And I reiterate, they had a sniper staring down the scope of a gun, keeping an eye on the peaceful, at least at the beginning of it, crowd. What were they thinking was going to happen? What was he going to do? Was he going to start picking off people randomly? No, that event, I think, brought home to many Americans, African Americans, that they no longer have peace officers, but paramilitary law enforcement units, that they are occupied territory and cannot rely on them to help them. In fact, the only people who will protect them will be the community itself. This became reality when in Florida last month, a couple of cops attempted to arrest two people who were suspected of smoking joints. What ensued was a crowd of about 50 to 70 people proceeded to surround the cops and pretty much beat them out and kick them out of the neighborhood. I fear and truly believe that such events are going to become more common and not a rarity as those marginalized by society no longer feel attached to it and become rebellious of it. This contrasts with other events, such as when a teen was given house arrest after killing four people because he was, quote, too rich to be held responsible for his actions. Compare that to what happens to a number of poor and, again, largely teenagers of color who are thrown in jail. In New York City, they had a case where one 16-year-old, and I don't think it was just one, I think there were three, but at least one, who was in jail for 3 years without a charge. And then, of course, you have the Clyde Bundy event, where you had armed men threatening not only to kill government agencies, but calling on the overthrow of the government. And not once did I see a sniper or even riot gear at this event. Of course, Clive and his supporters were white. And that's not all that made the news. But we'll cover that after this break.
SpongeBob, you're wasting me precious carbon dioxide. I'm pumping it into the atmosphere, boy. Thanks to global warming, the temperature will soon go through the roof, and then we'll have an endless summer.
Why do you want an endless summer, Mr. Krabs?
So I can open me latest money-making venture, the Krusty Pool.
The endless summer does sound fun.
And profitable.
Fun and profitable. Big business does it again.
Unfortunately, for those of us who aren't talking sponges, climate change isn't quite as fun. Luckily, there are many easy ways for students to conserve energy.
If chargers for cell phones, cameras, and laptops are left plugged in, they continue to draw electricity even when not connected to the device. This phantom load can be avoided by unplugging electronics and chargers after use. A more convenient option is to hook electronics up to a power bar, which can be switched off after use.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
And we're back. I'm going to go a little bit more rapid fire for these last ones. So this year saw sexism, and more specifically, violence against women become a major talking point, a real thing that has suddenly been realized we need to address in a much more urgent and active way than sort of happened before. You had your Gamergate. For those who don't know about this, well, it started as a dispute between a game developer, female, and her ex-boyfriend, who publicly made some harsh comments. not much in and of itself, but this became big when after condemning some of the comments as misogynistic, the online community, well, at least the troll part of it, and in far more larger numbers for most decent people to be comfortable with, well, it did a full-force online attack, including but not limited to threats of rape, death threats, hacking our online accounts, a complete shitstorm. The hashtag Gamergate was intended to redirect, in an unfriendly way, the debate away from the sexism and onto the, quote, unethical journalism. I should point out the original complaint mentioned that the game developer had a personal relationship with a game reviewer, although conflicts of interest were completely debunked early on. And Gamergate, like all American controversies, seemed to need to add gate to the issue. So Gamergate, thank you, Watergate. Anyway, by trying to make the debate not about sexism, well, that only seemed to intensify the harassment of women in the gaming world. Speaking engagements were canceled for fear of death threats. Well, on top of that, you had numerous sports players who were called out, at least for their violence against women, the most infamous being Ray Rice, who knocked out his fiancée in an elevator on film, and the initial tepid response of the NFL. And that's not even scratching the surface when we start thinking about women who would bring forth accusations about rape only to be slut-shamed and have their schools protect the star athletes from investigations, let alone prosecutions. And of course, closer to home, we had the complete meltdown of Gian Gomeshi, who seemed to think that hitting and choking women was an acceptable part of sex. Seems he was wrong. And another Canadian lowlight was the whole Dalhousie Dentistry School debacle. Well, I don't really know what to call it, really. A significant number of male students set up a Facebook page to discuss how they could sexually assault their fellow female classmates. And the university, it dealt with it very badly. It still is dealing with it fairly badly. And of course, we ended the year with another legend who fell short of the ideal he attempted to project for himself as more and more women are coming forth accusing Bill Cosby of repeatedly using drugs to rape his female companions. It was a very bad thing, but I think in a good way, it has put a light on an issue that we just can't seem to ignore anymore because it is no longer in the background, quietly accepted, is now in our face, and we need to deal with it. Another, what I'm going to call a low light, was Pirate Bay, the ground zero of shared media, the peer-to-peer website, the torrent hub of the world. Well, it was finally brought down this year. I shouldn't say finally, there's actually rumors that it will be resurrected in the new year. But after years and years of fighting the Swedish government, it seems finally there was a raid in the early part of December that shut down the servers and went dark, one of the bright lights of the idea that information should be shared equally amongst all people. We also had Hong Kong's umbrella fizzolution. I call it a fizzolution because, well, it wasn't quite a revolution. The students in Hong Kong were fighting for the right to vote for whoever they wanted to in upcoming elections. The Chinese government had promised them free elections, but it turns out free in the Chinese context meant you were free to elect someone that we have approved to be on the list of candidates. And this didn't go over well with the youth of Hong Kong. So they set up this Occupy Wall Street type movement and blocked off streets. It got the name Umbrella because, well, one of the things they were all worried about, obviously, whenever you have this kind of thing, is tear gas and the use of water cannons. So the students came out and they brought umbrellas to help deflect these type of attacks by the government against them. And again, it seems to be a fizzolution because although they tried to do this for years and years, they came across three major really blocks, really, if I think about it. The first one is, well, Hong Kong's never really had a history of democracy. Even when the British were there, the British appointed governors. They weren't ever actually elected. You also had, of course, an intransigent Chinese government, which was not going to let any sort of popular revolt succeed. And sadly, you had a lot of conservative people in Hong Kong, the parents sort of these children, who said, okay, you did what you did. Be quiet. Let's move along now and get back to a peaceful, if not democratic, society. You also had top of the news this year, Pope Francis, who came out again and again on the side of socialism, on the side of the poor, weakening the stance against things like homosexuality, women in the church and such. Again, I think he's more show than substance, but it was definitely a better highlight. We, of course, had Scotland that rejected independence. We had the Basques who voted for independence. Sadly, the Scottish referendum was acknowledged by the British government, and so they still get to be there. The Basques, unfortunately, their referendum was ignored by the Spanish government, so they're still part of Spain, even though they don't seem to want to be. This was the year that the US, UK, and NATO officially withdrew from Afghanistan. But of course, there are still troops there in, quote, training purposes. In a really great highlight, US finally reopened diplomatic relationships with Cuba, something that has dogged the United States ethically and Cuba financially since the 60s. And of course, you had Japan, which reached the 1 quadrillion yen debit, or that's over 10 trillion American, 12 trillion Canadian. Who says you can't run a successful first world nation with a huge deficit? Japan's been doing it for almost 3 decades now. And of course, you had all the hacking that went on. Sony, Microsoft, everyone got hacked last year. This was the year that Apple was brought down. It used to have this illusion that Apples were virus-free. And well, this year, they're just like the rest of us, folks. And I guess I'm gonna end the show on this one final note. There were a lot of people who died this year. Sadly, people die every year. But one of the ones that struck me personally was the death of Robin Williams. You know, I did a whole show basically about him. And so I'm going to end on a little bit of Robin Williams. So this is Don saying, eyes open, minds on. And a happy new year.
Want a linguistic adventure? Go drinking with a Scotsman. Because you can't fucking understand them before. You land in Scotland and they're going, "Tittle keep any fill, eh?" Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right, you dig it, eh?
Fuck, take it, fuck, like burn the bullets, that's it, eh? Pay something you like, eh? Sure. Oh, fuck, sure, eh? Man, you know about my backside, they'll tweak your ass on the pool of it, came, eh? Sure. Oh, sure, you dumb fucking bastard. You realise that, eh? And you realise how drunk they get, they could wear a skirt and not care. And how they could invent a sport like golf. Here's my idea for a fucking sport. A knock a ball in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like pool?
Fuck off, pool! Not with a straight stick, with a little fucked up stick. I whack the ball that goes in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like croquet?
Fuck croquet! I put the hole hundreds of yards away! Oh, fuck out of here! It's great fun there! Oh, yeah, that's a great thing!
Oh, like a bowling thing?
Fuck no! Not straight, I put shit in the way! Like trees and bushes and high grass, so you can lose your fucking ball and go whacking away with a fucking tire iron! Whacking away, and each time you miss, you feel like you're gonna have a stroke. Fuck, that's what we'll call it. A stroke, because every time you miss, you feel like you're gonna fucking die. Oh, great. Oh, and here's a bit of bat. Oh, fuck, this is brilliant. Right near the end, I'll put a flat piece with a little flag to give you fucking hope. But then I'll put a pool and a sandbox to fuck with your ball again. Ah, you'll be there trash on your ass. Jerking away in the sand!
Oh, and you do this one time?
Fuck no! 18 fucking times! Man! And you have a sport!
The manly sport of golf, where you can dress like a pimp and no one will care. Where you can wear clothes and even a blind gay man would go, "Oh, dear Christ." Those are loud. This is not carnival. What the fuck are you on? Even the alligator's going, "Asshole." And you get in the... It's such an exciting athletic sport, too. Whack the ball, get in the cart. Whack the ball, get in the cart. And the commentary's electrifying. Just this side of curling for really getting me going.
Could people be quieter? I'd like to hear the grass grow.
I want the guy who does Mexican soccer to do golf one time. The ball is running. The ball is going to the... All those old waspy motherfuckers go, oh dear Christ! My God, they're not gardening, they're playing now! Oh shit! What the hell are we gonna do? Because that was their last domain of dominance. It was their area. They were the king up until Tiger.
Yes!
Son of a black man and a Thai woman. Not even a German geneticist could have thought that one up. Black athletic ability, Buddhist concentration. Crouching putter. And then he goes to the British Open and he plays at St. Andrews, where they fucking invented the sport. And after the fourth round, he's 18 under par, and there's only 18 fucking holes. And all the old men are going, oh my God, we're doomed. How did he learn to play? We wouldn't let him join. Dear God. And they start having nightmares of golf carts going... Yo, 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 I'm playing through. Whether you're a Gentile or a Jew. Pebble Beach, motherfucker. Sandy.
We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion, poetry, beauty, romance, love. These are what we stay alive for.
Carpe diem, seize the day. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Strive to find your own voice. Seize the day, look at it in another way. Carpe diem, seize the day. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Strive to find your own voice. Seize the day.
We are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. Words and ideas can change the world. The powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. The powerful play goes on, goes on.
Do you have any special skills?
Oh, yes, I do. I do voices.
What do you mean, you do voices?
I do voices.
Yeah! I'm a hip-hop ready, who could hip-hop, bebop? Dance, dance, dance till you drop, drop, drop. I'm a hip-hop ready, who could hip-hop, bebop? Yo, yo, make a wicked cup of cuckoo.
I'm a raptor, doing what I can. Gonna eat everything till the appearance of man. Yo, yo, see me, I'm living below the soil. I'll be back, but I'm coming as oil.
This is rock and roll, rock and roll.
Dance, dance, dance till you drop, drop, drop.
Cast your eyes to the summer sky. Today, make a wish.
You must strive to find your own voice. Because the longer you wait to begin, the less likely you are to find it at all.
Carpe diem, seize the day. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may.
Strive to find your own voice.
Seize the day, look at it in another way. Carpe diem, seize the day. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may.
Strive to find your own voice.
Seize the day.
Only in their dreams can men be truly free. 'Twas always thus, and always thus will be.
Apple pie from scratch. You must.